There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave counsel. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go on FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poore filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan. You hear me on these very airways from 9 a.m. till noon. A lot to talk about today, kind of piggybacking on my show. I'm going to give you some headlines real quick. We're still watching for the outcome in a handful of states left to go. I think Nevada, Arizona, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia. Who's going to be the next president of the United States? It's like the world's most chaotic and stress-inducing game show. So we're keeping an eye on that. Should get some more answers perhaps by the time this show, while we're on the air, or before it concludes. So let's stay tuned for that. Also, one other big news item, I think, Kay Ivey extending the mask ordinance, extending her safer at home ordinance, rolling back some parts of it, some tenets of it, but still gonna wear the mask until December the 11th. So those are two big things going on in the news. We'll talk about it all in your text, 251-343-0106 here on Midday Mobile. Got a guest going to sit in with us for the entirety of the program, a friend of mine. You hear him on my show occasionally, but Parker Griffith, former congressman in 5th Congressional District up in North Alabama, and kind of, I would say, the Democrat response to a lot of things I do on my program. Congressman, how are you this afternoon?
Matt, we're doing great. The weather's good up here, and it's great to be with you. And it is an exciting time to be an American. And gosh, we are witnessing a rare event. It probably will not happen but every three or four decades, but this is really, really a contest. And I know Alabama loves contests, and they're a very competitive state, so I'm sure people are watching and the numbers and the votes and the totals and the strategies of both teams and how they're going to play this out. And it's a great time, particularly those of us who love politics and recognize how important politics are. This contest between President Trump and Biden is, wow, classic.
Let's I guess kind of set up some kind of where you're coming from. I mean, you're a supporter of Joe Biden. You're Democrat. You're in that camp. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, that is fair.
So sitting here today, seeing what you're seeing and the way this is playing out, if you're a Democrat, it's hard for me to get in the shoes of a Democrat. But do you feel good about where we're at, or where you're at as far as a Democrat?
Yeah, yes, I think that as far as the election is concerned, the votes that are coming in Pennsylvania and in Georgia, I expect those will favor Biden. Lots of mail-ins, and the demographics of where those votes are coming from, I think will favor Biden. It'll be razor thin. It's not like it'll be overwhelming, but I suspect that even Arizona will go for Biden. And if Arizona goes for Biden, I don't know when they'll may call that, but that puts him at 270. And of course, if he were to win Pennsylvania and or Georgia, he's the president-elect. Now, the challenges, there'll be many. That's one thing. If you got some, if you got a dollar in your pocket, a lawyer will take it if you want a suit. So there's tons of money that'll be spent both challenging and lawyers on the other side defending. And so I don't know how long this will take. It's possible that it might not go to the Supreme Court. But it looks like it's headed that way. Ordinarily, elections are state issues, not federal issues. So there'll have to be some significant questions raised, I think, for it to get to the Supreme Court. I'm kind of concerned about timing. I mean, how long is this going to take?
Yeah.
I mean,
so, I think you're right about this, that it ultimately winds up in the Supreme Court for sure. But and there's probably hundreds of different possibilities to why you could challenge this on the federal sure. level, equal protection, civil rights, or whatever. Then it's got to get it stay in court. But my gosh, you know, courts aren't known for their hurry up offense. Let's say this is going to drag out for a while.
Yeah, and I think people are prejudging unfairly the nominees that President Trump put forth and are now on the Supreme Court. These are gifted lawyers. They are well-trained. They believe in the law. They have a duty to the American public. And I think people think that because President Trump appointed them and they were approved, that somehow they're going to be partisan. I don't think that's true. I don't think they'll be partisan. I think they'll be straight up with their judgments. And I think we need to talk more about how if whatever ruling they make,
right,
we need to accept it.
Well, we saw this very early on in the Trump administration. You remember the travel ban, the very first one, where Trump wasn't going to allow
people struck down.
But I would argue the reason it got struck down was in part they just didn't make a good legal case. The Trump administration made it was weak. It didn't seem very thought out. There were 100 different ways they could have presented it better, I thought. So the question is, based on that experience, have they really figured out how to work the court system in a way that they're going to prove successful if they got to with this presidential election?
Yeah, I agree with you. And their client, who is Donald Trump, I imagine is very, very difficult to work with. And so a good lawyer has the confidence of his client, and he can be a professional without worrying about whether his client is happy or unhappy. And unfortunately, these lawyers are going to have to be very, very gifted at handling Trump, because I believe that President Trump feels like he's probably a better lawyer than they are, and I think it could cause trouble for his challenges. It's out there. I mean, from a perspective of, I'm a businessman. I've been sued. I've been in the courthouse. I've had to defend myself. I've been in politics. I've had things said, done, whatever. You got to trust your professionals, and it's hard. It's really, really hard for somebody who is as gifted as Trump is and as independent as Trump is and someone who's been as successful as Trump to turn over his fate to someone else. And it can go against him if he's unable to do that.
Well, I think he'll... I guess he's going to defer to the proper officials on this, but we can debate that after the break. Take a quick time out. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Poore filled in for Sean Sullivan.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. Not Sean Sullivan here. This is Jeff Poor of the Jeff Poor Show. You can hear me 9 to noon on these very airways. Filling in for Sean, who's taking some well-deserved time off after a very chaotic and tumultuous election cycle. So hopefully he comes back rested, relaxed here the next few days. Still with us here to join us for the entirety of the program, my friend, former Congressman Parker Griffith. Congressman Doug Jones goes down on Tuesday night. Not a total surprise, but it seems to me that no matter how much money you dump into Alabama, unless everything lines up just right, you're probably not going to win as a Democrat in this state for the time being.
I think absolutely. You know, when I ran for governor, I think I got 33 or 35% of the vote. I could have stayed at home, sat in my chair, and not campaigned a time and gotten the same amount of vote. Doug ran a great campaign. I mean, it was good. It was tailored to the issues and took on his opponent, called him Trump's water boy. And, you know, it was everything politics was supposed to be. And I think Doug wound up with under 40%, I think. I didn't see the final numbers, but you can't change the National Democratic Party, or you can't sell the National Democratic Party in Alabama. It is not a product that we want. It's not a product that we can sell. We can't modify it with rhetoric. We can't dilute it. We can't change it. And we can't sell it here. So if you're a Democrat in Alabama and you want to be in public service and you have a heart for it, you're probably going to have to consider nonpartisan races, such as maybe mayors, et cetera, school board maybe. But a statewide office, unless you're black and in a black district, then you're not going to be elected as a Democrat in Alabama unless it's a special case. How Doug got elected the first time, because his opponent was so damaged by innuendo and rumor that nobody was going to vote for Mr. Roy Moore, so they voted for Doug. But once that changed, and there was no special cases out there, gosh, there was no way for Doug Jones to win, but he ran a good campaign. Now, it's been rumored, and I'm hearing it all over, that possibly if Biden wins, that Doug Jones could be considered as a possibility for Attorney General. Could very well be. He's capable, qualified, and he's got some historical advantages being from the South, and he knows Biden, and Biden knows him. Anyway, that's a possibility, and that would probably be good for Alabama.
Well, I tell you though, the conundrum that is Doug Jones, and he takes issue with me on this. I guess he listens to the program occasionally. I thought he would go the route of being a Joe Manchin. I thought that he would buck his party whenever, you know, whenever it just seemed like impeachment or with the Supreme Court justices, that on the big stuff, the big, you know, picture stuff that gets all the media attention, that he would, you know, maybe cater more to a right of center audience. And he didn't do that. But he tried to make this case on this program when he was running that he voted with Richard Shelby more than he voted with Chuck Schumer. But he never took that approach from the you know, that he was going to be is the maverick or whatever. He just seemed like he fell in line with the he fell in line with the Democratic leadership on the stuff that everybody was paying attention to.
And I'm sure that was a very hard decision for him to make, because you know, sitting around, what should I do? Should I oppose the Supreme Court nominee? Should I buck it? Should I stand out and say, I'm a Democrat, but I think this man ought to be confirmed, et cetera? I'm sure he confronted that and discussed it. And he came down and said, basically, I'm going to have to win. Even if I were to change and try to gather some favorability in the general population of Alabama, it wasn't going to work. He'll still have a D by his name, and it's a terrible place to be.
We see this playbook in Alabama politics, particularly with yourself, Richard Shelby, others. Why not serve as a Democrat then, maybe switch to the Republican Party later on? Would that have ever even been in the cards?
No, not for Doug. His reputation, no. When I switched parties, I came into Congress on the Obama wave, and it was an emotional hotbed. And many of the things that were going on in D.C. were not good for Alabama, but it didn't make any difference to Alabamians, particularly Democratic Alabamians, because they were hysterical about Obama. And so when I switched parties, the Republican Party didn't want me, and the Democratic Party damn sure didn't want me. And so I had to get a concealed carry permit.
It's you.
Just walk around.
Straight out of Compton there or something.
Exactly. No, it's a hard, hard thing. I remember there was a congressperson that was going to run for governor, and the Affordable Care Act vote came up, and he was Montgomery, Birmingham, Artur Davis, Congressman Davis, and yeah. he voted against the Affordable Care Act, and it brought down holy hell on his head. And so I think Doug Jones has seen some of that, and he knew it wasn't going to work, so he might as well line up and take his medicine, so to speak.
Do you think this happened? We heard, people in the Democratic Party say this, that given Doug Jones got involved in that whole mess with Nancy Worley and Joe Reed and pushed them out and got, we have Chris England now, got this new leadership involved in the Democratic Party in Alabama, that maybe hurt him a little, getting his own voters to vote for him.
It could have. He was doing the right thing. And when he comes back to Alabama, he will be someone that Democrats turn to for leadership. The problem the Democrats have is they're all lined up in their little camps. You've got the progressive camp, you've got the environmental camp, you've got the LGBTQ camp, you've got the black camp, you've got the elite white Democrats who are in their own little isolated silo. So you've got these multiple silos out there. They're called Democrats, but you can't get them all in a room and decide on what three things that they think are most important and develop messages around that. It's really difficult. I've sat through so many Democratic meetings, and it's almost like they just want to be heard. They don't want to win. And there's a difference. Give them a chance to talk for 20 minutes, and they're fine. But that old saying, I think I may have said this on the air before, and the guy said, the Democrats don't
just bring a knife to the gunfight. They bring a covered dish. They don't. The Democrats don't know how to win, and the policies in D.C.
They're not winners. Hey, Carson, I think we're gonna work in a break here, folks. Stay tuned. This is Midday Mobile with Jeff Poore today.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile. No Sean Sullivan today. He is taking some time away. You got me. Yeah, Jeff Poore. You hear me from 9 to noon on these very airways. For those of you that maybe don't listen at that time, yes, I have a radio show as well. But hopefully Sean is taking advantage of his time away from the microphone. Still sitting in with me today. He is a former congressman, a former gubernatorial candidate, a Democrat, Parker Griffiths from North Alabama. Congressman, the Democratic Party in Alabama, I thought maybe they would. Is there anything that's positive to take away from Tuesday night? Because it seemed like 2017 was kind of the high water mark, and then everything else has been downhill from there.
I think so. I don't think there's much to take away. I think in my comments to some of my friends that we've communicated with is that we seem to not be able to face reality. We seem to be in denial. The idea so many people thought Doug Jones was going to win. Doug Jones was doing this. Doug Jones was doing that, and it was just a head in the sand of denying vote totals, the volume, and it really wasn't going to be a contest. Maybe you can say, well, the great thing about it is we had a candidate. And it was great, and we rallied around. We made some signs. We put them in the yards. Doug had raised a ton of money from out of state. That's the other thing. It's very hard for a Democrat to raise in-state money. Nobody wants to write a check to a loser, and so you. You get your money from people who say, well, let's go down there and rescue Alabama from those darn Republicans. And so they write some checks, some of your more liberal groups. Doesn't do any good. But the takeaway is, if the Democrats do not change leadership, openly deny that Pelosi is good for us here in Alabama, we've got to be more guerrilla-like. We've got to attack our own party in order to convince the voter of Alabama that we're not going to be some liberal nut out of New York and agree with them.
Right.
We can't do that. Our other problem is the evangelical base here in Alabama is very, very strong. And it's an emotional base. And so there's when you're confronted by a voter who is emotionally set, there's no point in trying to convince them otherwise. It's like talking to an Auburn fan about why they ought to really love Alabama. They ain't gonna do it. So we got a problem there. And the abortion issue has never gone away in Alabama. And the baby killer stuff is out there. Communism, socialism. You know, that's the funny thing about Alabama. It has single-payer medicine now. Blue Cross Blue Shield has 85% of the market. Medicare, Medicaid, all single-payer. Our military, TRICARE, single-payer. But yet, when you talk to them about universal care, that everyone needs health insurance, they say, oh, no, we don't want that. That sounds like socialism, or that sounds like communism.
I don't think people think that deeply about these things. What it looks like to me, though, is, okay, Democrats came in. They got, and you guys had to walk the plank when you were in Congress on the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah.
Here we are. The healthcare system is not better off, at least from the average person's perspective. Maybe a few more people are covered, but you look at it, particularly in Alabama, and you think about it. You know, what did we get out of that? And I think a lot of people, that just reinforces their belief system that Democrats, they're not really making this better, but just for a handful of people.
I think that's right. I think the average citizen who's paying for his health insurance or paid into Medicare and is now being taken care of by Medicare, I think they see this as a group of people who are uninsured that are riding on their coattails. And only when it happens to them specifically, so their insurance gets dropped and they have a medical problem, or they have a relative who cannot be insured, et cetera, et cetera, then they begin to pay attention. They forget about the other parts of that, where hospitals in these small rural communities have closed. You cannot recruit businesses into a community where the mother of children says, well, what about medical care? Well, we don't have any here. You've got to go 40 miles down the road. So those communities are drying up. Even our major hospitals, whose emergency rooms are packed with the uninsured, that has a drain on the quality of care in that hospital, and it doesn't have to be that way. We're too wealthy a country not to be able to figure this out. And if we politicize it and make it them or us, or then we don't go anywhere. Because the first thing a politician does is put his finger in the air and decide whether he can get reelected if he votes for or against something. And healthcare should be nonpartisan.
Well, about all this healthcare talk and the crown jewel of Democratic politics in Alabama is Medicaid expansion. And if we just expand Medicaid and everything, That's not what the problem is. It's kind of a chicken egg problem, right? These places in Alabama that are losing population, they're not able to sustain businesses or hospitals, I should say, because no one lives there, so no one's using the hospital, so the hospitals close. Well, without a hospital there, no one wants to live there, so that worsens the problem. So, you got to go back to square one, right, and say, you need to grow these places and make it where the free market says we will put a hospital here. It's in our best interest to put a hospital here. And then we can have that discussion about coverage and Medicaid expansion. But right now you're asking the legislature, Republican-controlled legislature, where all the Obamacare stuff is so unpopular to their constituents, to give up whatever their buy-in to Medicaid expansion is. That's a big sum of money, like $250 million, I don't know the number off the top of my head, but enough to make them say, hey, we'd rather do what we want to do with that money than have it tagged toward Medicaid expansion. We just don't think that's the right policy proposal. So that's the problem. You got to figure out some of these problems at the core in these black belt and rural places that don't have hospitals, and get people to want to live there to be able to sustain a hospital. Then I think we could talk about coverage or whatever.
That's fair. I think what you said is fair, and I think Medicaid expansion, we got to call it something else. That's I ran on Medicaid expansion. I think Don Siegelman probably ran on Medicaid expansion. Whatever. We see the benefit of it, but it's politically. We can't get it done. Now, if the Democrats are able to craft an improvement of Obamacare and get it changed for the better, because there are lots of flaws in Obamacare. That's Pelosi and I had a head-on collision on Obamacare. It was after midnight the night that Obamacare passed, and she was 7 or 8 votes shy, and there was an abortion clique there in the House that was not going to vote for it because they felt like it provided money for abortions, and she called each one of them off the floor back into a conference room, and they came out and they voted for it, and it was a bad bill, totally partisan. Not one Republican vote for it.
Right. Well, that's the problem, because you didn't have any Republican buy-in, and then, here we are 10 years later, and no one's particularly excited about it. It's just hard to, trust us this time, seems to be the notion. But we'll see. Let's work in a phone call real here. Bob from Mobile wants to weigh in on health care. Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, can you hear me?
I got you, Bob.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello? Oh, okay. Well, I was just wanting to jump in on this. I worked really, really hard to get a job, and went to a trade school and got a job where I could get health insurance for my family. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't even go to work for my second employer because he didn't have health insurance, and he finally got it. And so, I disagree with this idea that we're just rich enough that we can just give health care to everybody. Is health care really a human right? I don't know that the Constitution says that health care is just a right that we should just all have. Because if it's a right, that means that you can take it away from somebody else. So if health care is a right, that means you get to walk up to a doctor and say, I have the right for you to take care of me. And that is just wrong. And when I see things like Medicare for all and let's just give everybody health care, I go, well, dude, I've been paying $800 a month with my employer, paying a whole lot more than that for years.
Yeah, it's like it's, that's a great point, Bob. But thanks for the call, Bob. But, Congressman, so Bob says, we're calling health care a right. And that a lot of people paid their way through it and didn't use the market, whatever the market system was in place. Now all of a sudden you want to make it a right. If you make healthcare a right, it's going to have broader implications on healthcare as a whole than if you look at it as something different than something we're guaranteed to have.
Yeah, I think the public needs to come to a different decision on that. Let's don't talk about it as a right. Let's talk about it. Is it the right thing to do for the citizens of America? Is it something that we as a country would feel good about it if we knew that someone would not go broke or bankrupt because of an unexpected illness? Is it something that we as Americans would ordinarily say, is it a good idea for everyone to have access to health care? As opposed to saying, arguing what's a right and what's not a right, then you're off the subject. Then you're talking about something else. You're talking about some philosophical neverland that you can argue forever. We have to remember that President Trump had the votes, or he had the numbers, to repeal Obamacare and could not repeal Obamacare, which told any number of the senators who were hearing from their constituents that we don't want it repealed. we want it improved, but not repealed. And so,
I mean, it came close, and I would argue the reason John McCain didn't go with it, it had nothing to do with what his constituents were telling him. He was just mad at Donald Trump for being Donald Trump and being president.
Okay, now that's a great point. That's one of the weaknesses
let's
of
pick
Trump.
It up. Let's pick it up on the other side. Got to get a break in here. This is FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor filling in for the legendary Sean Sullivan, who's taking some time away. Jeff Poor, the Jeff Poor Show, in case you had never heard of it, on 9 to noon here on these very airwaves. Let's work in some phone calls real quick. Let's first hear from Troy. Troy, tell us what's on your mind.
Hey, I wanted to talk about terminology on this healthcare issue. I happen to be a certified financial planner, so I follow this Affordable Care Act pretty closely, and it used to be a conversation about insurance, and as we know, insurance is a transfer of risk, you know, over to a company in exchange for a premium for events that are unforeseen or accidents or whatnot. And now it's a conversation about healthcare, and healthcare is completely different. And if you were to ask me, I'd say healthcare starts, you know, in your own home. Do I eat an apple or a Twinkie? And in that sense, yeah, everybody has a right to healthcare. But does everybody have a right to a doctor? Well, maybe have right to access to a doctor, but it doesn't mean that it's paid for. Anyway, could you guys address maybe that difference in the terminology insurance versus healthcare and the move? Do y'all see that move, or am I sort of out of my wits?
Hey, thanks for the call, Troy. So, Congressman, Troy wonders this, that can you... You look at this, the terminology you use. Everyone has a right to health care. Does that mean you have the right to a doctor? It's like we throw around all these terms about what people are, what they have a right to. And he makes this point. He says, well, you know, health care starts at home. It's picking to eat an apple instead of a Twinkie, right? How do you reconcile the right to health care when health care is, a lot of it is personal behavior?
Sell cigarettes in Alabama. The death rate from lung cancer secondary to smoke, more people die from lung cancer secondary to cigarettes than colon, breast, and prostate combined. And we still have them on the market, and it's a deadly drug. We watched the OxyContin fiasco ravage medical communities, and we are number one or two in cigarette consumption, one or two in obesity. Hypertension is right there. So we are an unhealthy state because of our habits. And so his point, I think, is well made. Now, how are you going to change behavior? Well, you have to change it through education. You can't forcefully change it in America because we don't believe in telling somebody that they've got to do something. We can make cigarettes so expensive that the number of people who smoke goes down. We can educate our children of what to eat and what not to eat, but it's going to have to come through education, and that's going to be slow. And we know that our educational level here, our medical IQ level, is very, very low in Alabama.
Because we need to, let's work in one more call here.
Yeah.
Damon wants to weigh in on this discussion. Damon, what's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I wanted to kind of chime in a little bit because I've followed the health care and Affordable Care Act thing from the start, and I'm from a perspective where I worked in somewhat of the medical field as a first responder, And I know that at the time when the Obamacare talk first came out, the biggest problem the country had was indigent care. They had an agreement in place with hospitals that says you cannot refuse medical treatment to someone who needs it. In other words, whoever shows up at an emergency room, you can't turn them away. Well, hospitals said, well, who's going to pay the bill? So the United States government had an agreement in place with all these hospitals to pay a third of the bill. Well, that bill got more and more expensive every year. It's just like you budgeting for trash pickup, and it's $12 one year, and the next year it's $20, and the next year it's $40 and $50, and you look up 10 years later, it's $200. That's the same thing that was happening with payment for indigent care. So Obamacare was supposed to address people who will not get insurance, who don't have access to it, but go to the emergency room for treatment and stick the bill on somebody else with frequent bad health problems, smoking, cigarettes, COPD, all these bad health habits they have, and they're frequent flyers at their medical emergency rooms. They go 4 or 5 times a week. That was driving the cost of care up, and the government could not continue to do it. And that's what the original purpose was to address that.
Well, and it's not clear. Thanks for the call, David. So David raises a good point here, Congressman, that, you know, indigent care, Obamacare was supposed to address that you had this coverage that had to be taken care of, but it didn't seem to address that problem. People are still using emergency room, and the costs still seem to be going up, that there's some kind of disconnect between what was sold.
That was one of the huge fallacies of Obamacare. The very people it was supposed to save or help, it left them out. And it encouraged insurance companies to keep doing what they were doing. It encouraged drug companies to keep doing what they were doing. And so it was a feel-good thing for Pelosi and Obama to pass Obamacare. And for a certain segment of the population, they can brag on that. But it was a bad bill. But they wanted something. They had to have something, and they forced it, and they got it. But it's still very, very contentious. It did not solve the problem it was supposed to solve, and
right.
You know, so.
Well, let's get in a break here. We'll pick it back up on the other side. This is Midday Mobile. Jeff Porfield in for Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.